Imagine Moses, the iconic leader of Israel, feeling like a complete nobody. Yes, even Moses struggled with insecurities. In fact, he was broken, flawed, and lonely. And yet God called upon Moses to become the leader of his people. I am Clayton Bjellin, and today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll describes the inflection point when everything changed for Moses. God spoke to him in an audible voice that sounded from a burning bush. It's a sensational story that had profound implications for Moses and practical application for us all. Chuck titled this message, Burning Bushes and Second Chances.
Let's turn in our Bibles to Exodus chapter 3 as we continue in our study of the life of Moses. There is a 19th century proverb which has come down the pike and fallen into our ears on a number of occasions. The problem with it is that it is not true, even though it is often quoted. The bird with the broken pinion never soars as high again. Have you ever heard that? It says, in effect, that once you have failed, you will never, ever attain any higher heights than you did at the time you failed. I did a little study on that proverb and found that it was written by a fellow named Hezekiah Butterworth. No kidding. And that's all I know about him, and that's all I want to know about him. Guy with a name like that ought to write a saying like that. It really isn't true. Stop and think. Abraham was a liar. But after he lied, he came to be known as the friend of God, didn't he? He was an intimate friend of God, even though he had been a liar. He had a broken pinion. Jacob was a chiseler. He was a deceiving brother who talked his twin brother out of his birthright. And even though he did that, God lifted Jacob to such heights that his name was changed to Israel. Rahab, now there is a broken pinion. Rahab was a harlot. She lived in the red light district of Jericho, if you please. And yet God selected her to be a very choice instrument of his in preserving two men of God whose lives were being threatened. And do you know her name appears in God's hall of faith in Hebrews 11? How about Jonah? John Mark, missionary dropouts. Jonah never really dropped in, you know. He was a dropout from the start. After he made that curious amphibious landing there on the shores, he went and he preached in Nineveh the greatest revival in the history of time. You know that? After he had run from God and had all sorts of broken pinions, God said, Jonah, I still want to use you. And he deposited him in Nineveh, and he led a revival the likes of which the record of history cannot contain. John Mark was the same. He dropped out, but he came back into the swing of things, and believe it or not, he wrote the Gospel of Mark. He became a man who was profitable for Paul's ministry. Paul said so. I'll tell you tonight, if birds with broken pinions could never fly again as high, I wouldn't be standing here. You see, that proverb may be good for birds of the sky, but it's not good for men and women of God, because God doesn't do that with his servants. As a matter of fact, even though it may sound like a maverick idea, God seems to prefer to use people with broken pinions. Isn't that neat? Aren't you glad? That takes all the strain out of it, doesn't it? That means that no matter what your past may have been, the future is brighter than you've ever known it. because he specializes in using broken failures. That's his preferred plan. Remember what he says in Corinthians, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. You know what the word means? It means clay pot. That's a reference to our bodies and our abilities. Clay pots. That's all you have to offer God. A pot. That's all you've got. Now, all of us are being molded, but some are moldier than others, right? Some of you are very brittle, very delicate china, and you break easily. So you got a lot of marks and glue marks all around because of those broken times. Others of you are rugged and scarred from a lot of use, not very attractive, but boy, are you useful. Others are still kind of soft, still being molded, still green, they call it. Others of you are in the kiln, in the desert. Your pot is being prepared for use. You see, man says, burn your bridges. God says, no, don't do that. You watch out for my burning bushes. I have them specially designed to attract your attention so that you will know where I want to use you and how. Now, Exodus 3, verses 1 through 10 is a passage that can become as profound or simple as you may wish. We could spend 3 weeks or a month on it, or we could spend one night. I choose to spend just tonight on the subject, and so I've divided it into four simple sections. I want to apply each section as we work our way through it rather than wait till the end and do the applying there, lest you forget the major points. The passage revolves around a day, a bush, a need, and a call. First, the day. Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Now, even though this was the day that God was going to break the 40-year silence, think about that. 40 years in the desert, and we have no record of God's speaking to Moses. The day that God was going to break the silence was like every other day in Moses' life. It began just like every other day. I have a reason for saying this. The night before, as he was sleeping out under the stars, perhaps beside Sinai with his flock, he saw no meteor flash across the sky. He heard no voice. No angel tapped him on the shoulder at breakfast that morning saying, pay attention, Moses. God speaks today. There was no special phenomenon that occurred to Moses or was seen by Moses to tell him, this is the day God will speak. It was a common, ordinary, garden variety day in the desert. That's all it was. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. Just another day. I want to say to you that that is the way God works. I want you to know that even though God may speak through me, which never ceases to amaze me, I can assure you, my day begins every day just like the day before. I never know what God is going to say or how he's going to lead. Every day is the same garden variety day, if you please, as the day before. As far as the elements, as far as time is concerned. Some feel at times that a pastor must live in a bubble that just floats around and just sort of presses up against the seventh heaven every once in a while and just gets a little goody from the throne up there. It's not like that. Not at all. I don't float from one crest to the next and just sort of live in a limbo between man and God. My world is a very real world, just like your world. For some of you, you'll be walking up steps about 8 o'clock or 8:15 tomorrow going to school. For others, before 7, you'll be on your way on that freeway driving at maddening pace to work. And that evening, you'll be driving back. For some, you'll face a classroom full of students. For others of you, you'll be walking into your military responsibility and putting on the uniform. For others of you, you'll be diapering or preparing for school the little children. That's your day. That's your Mount Horeb. That's your day in the desert, as it were, and it may be that day God is going to say something very special to you. Before I go to the next step, do you remember what the Lord tells us about Jesus coming? Is it going to be some great flash in the pan? No, he says it's going to be just like in the days of Noah. People will be merry and giving in marriage. There will be problems. There will be needs. Some will be driving buses. Others will be riding them. Some will be coming home from work. And then all of a sudden, his son will come. There will be a flash in the sky, and in the twinkling of an eye, it will all have occurred. No previous warning. That's God's method, you see. He doesn't need all of the accoutrements and the entanglements of plastic neon signs flashing on and off saying, "Hey, I'm going to do something great in your life." That's not God's plan. See, basically, if I may use the term without it sounding blasphemous, he's a meat and potatoes Heavenly Father. Don't live looking for some brilliant aura to come over you early in the morning saying, "This is the day." If you do that, you may never get out of bed. It may never occur. Just get blanket victory and bounce right on out and start the day just like any other day. I plan to do that, but that may be his day to say something very wonderful. Now the bush. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire. Yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, "I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up." Now a remarkable thing happened that morning, or maybe it was around noon. Moses was walking along, kicking his sandals in the sand, pushing those old woolies away from each other and getting them out of the briars and pushing them toward that area where there might be a little pasture land, and suddenly a bush caught on fire. Now I know there are probably some mystics who read this verse and say, "That was a special bush." I have seen artists' conception. Sometimes artists are great dreamers, but they are poor theologians. And I have seen the desert pictured like it's bland and plain vanilla, and it was, and little old bushes here and there, and there were. And then all of a sudden, there is this chromium bush, you know? Moses Bush, the name of the painting. And this big flame coming out of it. It's a special bush. It doesn't say it's a special bush. It says it's a bush. The Hebrew word says a thorny shrub. That's all it was. It was just a shrub. There were millions of them in the desert of Midian. Moses had seen, you'd seen one, you've seen them all. You know, it's that kind of a bush. Just thorny, dry, ugly old shrub. That's all it was. But this one had something happening to it that was different. Now remember, the bush wasn't different, but what was happening to it was different. That's important. You notice it says that God was in the midst of the bush. The bush wasn't God. The bush happened to be chosen by God and set on fire. And the fire was inextinguishable. And Moses was, of course, curious. And he did two things First, it says in verse 2, he looked. And second, he said something to himself. I have every reason to believe that you would have done the same thing had you been in his shoes that day. You know, it's not every day that you see bushes suddenly catching on fire and not going out. Perhaps he had seen bushes burn in the desert through some strange combustible phenomenon. A bush could catch on fire and then burn out. Doesn't take long for a dry shrub to burn out, but this one didn't. And Moses was walking on by, saw the bush, and it didn't go out. And he stood there for a minute and watched, and it kept burning and kept burning. And he thought, how strange that is. That bush isn't going out. Now, the bush wasn't strange, but the fire was. It kept blazing. And he stood there and he looked. I have a feeling he felt a little spooky, just like you would feel if you had been in his shoes. I don't believe he had the foggiest idea that God was in the bush. He was strangely attracted out of curiosity. Now, this is also God's method, and I don't want to be mystical or ambiguous at this point. I don't want to set your hopes on something that isn't true, but I want to give sufficient time to what this is saying so that you grasp it. God, in the common, ordinary, everyday lifestyle of our surroundings, occasionally does something that is strange. He burns a bush, as it were. We call these strange things coincidences. I think that's an unfortunate expression. Now, I'm not saying every coincidence, quote unquote, is God's burning bush. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that occasionally it is God's method of tapping you on the shoulder in your everyday life and saying, now stop, before you go any further on these steps up to the school. Or stop now, pull over to the side of the road. Wait a minute. God's saying something to you. Or whatever may be your circumstance, when you come across unusual events, you should think, what is God saying to me now? I was sitting in my office last Wednesday evening with a couple. We were talking about their plans for marriage. And they were discussing together regarding their future, and all of a sudden there was a strong knock at my door, at my study. And I paused and looked to the door and said, come in. And all of a sudden this fellow came through the door and stood about a foot or two from me, and he said, is your name Swindoll? I said, yes, it is. And he said, I just came to know Jesus because of you. And I wanted to see where you live. I said, sometime I feel like I live right here, believe me. He said, it all happened because of this. And he pulled a cassette tape out of his pocket. He is, at least in part-time in his work, a racing driver. He drives a racer. In fact, he bought the car that won this Long Beach race through the streets. Remember reading of it? He bought that number one car. He said, I have a friend, Jerry Hay, who said to me, Max, you need to hear this. So he kept giving me these cassettes. I'm sure he must have thought at first they were music. What a surprise, you know. And then he said, but you remember speaking on the subject of God's will, my way? And I said, yes, I remember that. He said, that was spoken to me. He said, when you talked that day, you talked to me. He said, I've had a couple of very close brushes. And apparently he meant with death. And suddenly I popped this thing in my cassette recorder in the car, and I was driving, and I heard that talk. And I thought, Lord, I need you. This is more than a coincidence. This is for me. And he came to know Jesus Christ that day. Jack Patton is another friend of mine who lives many miles away and has lived a number of years, hard years. He was, as I recall, a bombardier in the belly of a B-17. And his plane, along with thousands of other planes, flew missions over Germany and sections of Europe, just bombing the life out of those cities in the midst of World War II. But his bomber was unique. It didn't quite make it back to the base, and it crashed clumsily into a residential apartment section and killed many, many, many people, except Jack Patton. Jack walked out with hardly a scratch, even though he was in the belly of the plane at the time of the crash. So he went to his chaplain. Chaplain, why did the entire crew die and I live? You know what the chaplain said? Well, Jack, let's just say you were lucky. Jack knew there was more to it than luck. And he pursued and persisted the pursuit until finally, through that circumstance, that burning bush, Jack came to know Jesus Christ and lives for him in the business world today in another city. You see, things don't just happen, they're planned. In your desert, you're walking with the sheep, you suddenly come across one among thousands of other events that happen every day, and all of a sudden it's different. There are some different things about it. God uses that. You see, God doesn't speak vocally from heaven and shout his word down to you. He uses his book and he uses events in your life as if to say, pay attention to me. Listen to my burning bush. I want to use you. But in our hurried world, we just don't take the time. All God asked is a hushed spirit, a listening heart, like Moses. And now for the need itself. Look at verse 4. I think the most important word in the fourth verse is the first one. It is a word of timing. When, meaning at the same time. That word goes back to verse 3, where Moses said, I must turn aside. When did God speak to Moses? When he turned aside. Now that's simple, isn't it? But it's hard to get us to do that. Bushes burn, planes crash, lives change, events become what we call coincidences, and we roll right through them as if surrounded by a thick coat of leather. God says, what is it going to take to get you to stop and say, I'm going to see what this is saying? It was when Moses turned aside that God spoke, but I do not believe that Moses knew it was God even now. At this moment, God has not introduced himself, but a voice came out of that bush, and it simply called Moses' name. That's the first thing that happened. Moses. Moses. You know what Moses said in return? Here. That's what he said. Isn't that good? 40 years ago, he would have brought his resume. Glad you called me, God. Got 3 pages. You know? Not now. He's had 40 years in the desert. He's a nobody. So he's just simple enough to believe when a voice comes across that God means, or someone means, you're supposed to answer, present, all present and accounted for. I'm here. The Hebrew says, behold me. Just a simple explanation. Here I am. You know, that's all God wanted to hear. That's all he wants to hear from you when he speaks. He's not impressed with you. He's impressed with your availability.
God's not impressed by our qualifications. When he calls us to serve, he's looking for a willing heart. That's the underlying theme of this passage in Exodus. This is Insight for Living, and you're listening to a message from Chuck Swindoll titled Burning Bushes and Second Chances. If you're wondering why Chuck's voice sounds a little different today, it's because this classic study was presented and recorded several decades ago. I'm pleased to tell you that the original recordings have been digitally restored, and all 20 CDs are available so that you can listen to the entire series while commuting in the car or perhaps at home. To find out more about this series on Moses, you can call in Australia 1300 467 444 and in New Zealand on plus 613 9762 6613. I'm Clayton Bjellin. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his message called Burning Bushes and Second Chances, Thursday on Insight for Living.